Welcome to Truth, Lies, and Cover-Ups. I'm Tracy Brown, the fraud-busting body language expert. I've spent the last 20 years reading people, uncovering secrets hidden in plain sight to find the truth in crimes, politics, and billion-dollar business deals. And I want you to be able to tell whose pants are on fire, make better decisions, and build your bottom line as well. Get ready. Let's dive in. Hey, it's Tracy, and I have what I know is going to be a fantastic interview today on Truth, Lies, and Cover-Ups. I got Derek Clark with me. How you doing?
I'm doing well.
Good. Now,
excited to be here.
Oh, I'm thrilled that you're here too, because you are very top secret, and I love that kind of stuff. So, tell us a little bit about you, just real quick. I know you've done some counterintelligence, but fill us in on the whole thing.
So, I just retired actually this past year as a warrant officer, and I worked in counterintelligence for the Army. Mm-hmm. I was National Guard, but I worked full time for the Guard. So mm-hmm. I did a lot of stuff with counter drug mm-hmm. Operations and then counterintelligence. And I taught at the schoolhouse for the counterintelligence course. And so I taught a lot of people how to do that. Then deployed a few times. And I've always been in all of that. I think I was the most fascinated with just like the interview process and talking to people in either high stakes environments or just on the street to read people, and that was like the most fascinating part about my job. Not so much the report writing, but the just like the interaction. It was I loved it.
Well, I love high stakes as well. And I'm actually not cut out for a lot of situations that involve like death and things like that. So I've taken the skills into business, and I know you're doing some of the same stuff, but let's talk basics of counterintelligence, right? Because it sounds so sexy now. And I'm sure some of it is, but most of it's probably just day-to-day regular stuff. Tell me, like on day one of counterintelligence training, what do you tell people?
Like when I train someone? Or?
Yeah.
So yeah, like some people that this is first, I tell this is like the coolest job in the Army.
Uh-huh.
And because you get out and you talk to people and you meet people from all different cultures, like mm-hmm. wherever you're located, then it's your job to go and be the liaison, and, mm-hmm. and it's your job to go and like talk to people either on the street or you're strategic about who you talk to.
Mm-hmm.
And so you become a liaison to intelligence organizations, or you become the person that has these strategic conversations with the with your command, even at low ranks, because mm-hmm. there's not a lot of counter. It's not like you're an infantry guy and they're in you're just everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So when you might be a lower enlisted, but you're the only guy on the base,
mm-hmm.
and so you have some of these conversations with the commander, the base commander,
mm-hmm.
to talk about some safety and security and vulnerability assessments or things like that. So there's high expectations from the start,
mm-hmm.
but it's like, it's really rewarding because you get to be involved and mm-hmm. you get to talk to people and it's human intelligence. So you're one-on-one with people all the time. So if that's your thing, then you're going to love it. Mm-hmm. if you don't want to talk to people, then you're going to struggle.
it would seem very unusual if someone who didn't kind of know a little bit about it first showed up in class and said, wait a minute, I gotta talk to people.
I was here to listen to signals and stuff. I don't want to look at people.
Mm-hmm. Now can you give us a clue, and I know you can't talk about everything, I'm like, what kind of missions did you go on? You got any stories you can fill us in on?
Here's the thing, like what I did was mostly I would go out and just meet with people,
mm-hmm.
and so but a lot of times people would come to us and they would report information,
mm-hmm.
and I think there was one time when there was a guy that came into one of my teams. This was a time when I, like one of my deployments, when I was more in a supervisory role,
mm-hmm.
and he came in and he was telling us, this was in Iraq, And he was telling us, he was very specific. People come to us all the time and they would say, oh yeah, there's some people, moving weapons in this area. You should go check that out. And by the way, I gave you good information. So if you could pay me, that would be great. That was pretty common, but it was not so common that we saw someone with specific details. And so one guy was visiting with one of my teams, and he had these details, and I was like, I actually kind of want to meet him. I want to talk to this guy. So when I went to visit on their next meeting, he was really good. He had it was, his details were good. He was like, yes, they're using like these specific routes, and these are the types of weapons that they're bringing. And from, here's how they're, getting from Syria, and here's where they go after. Like he knew stuff. He's like, yeah, I live in this area. And, but here's the thing. I haven't been working. I haven't had a job for 6 months. So, if this stuff pans out, please, give me some money. And that wasn't any different than anyone else, but the difference was that he had details and his body language was just like, he was really confident with the way that he spoke. And he leaned in, he could answer all the questions, and like, he was really good, but something felt off.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I was like, something's weird. And because I usually will try and, if something feels weird, then I'll gauge it off of their body. And this wasn't working because he was so confident. And so I was like, something feels off. So I'm just going to blank slate him. And I closed my eyes. Like, I don't know anything about him. I don't know any context. I just, when I open my eyes, I'm going to answer the question, what do you see? And the first thing I saw was like a string hanging off the seam of his pants, like a string that you see on a new pair of pants. And when I looked a little bit, I was like, these are pretty crisp. Like they're nice pants. And then I saw his shoes were immaculate and zero tread wear. And then I was like, wow, but he's also got a really nice watch, like a fresh haircut. And no more than 3 days. And like his beard was like all chiseled and thin, like he was in NSYNC or something. And I was like, man, this guy looks really good. But then I was like, okay, now add context. He hasn't had a job in 6 months.
And
he knows all about these smuggling routes. So that's my context. And now then you move to analysis. Like, so where's he getting money? Cause that's all new. Like all of this stuff is nice. He's pristine. Where's he getting money? So that was, that became, okay, now I know why I'm doubting. He's saying that he doesn't have a job, but he looks like he's immaculate. And if I haven't had a job for like 3 weeks, I'm looking like Grizzly Adams. It turns out that this guy was also smuggling weapons from Syria into Iraq. He technically wasn't lying when he said he didn't have a job because he's a freaking entrepreneur. Right. He was ratting out his competition.
That's what I thought. He's trying to get rid of the competition.
Yeah, he's like, these guys are doing this and this and this. Go get them. Go pick them up. And we pull him in. We're like, this guy's got good stuff. it's because he was doing the same thing. He eventually got caught, and we're like he wanted us to help him out. We kept asking you, where are you getting money? Where are you getting money? He's like, no, I haven't worked in forever. So like that's the kind of thing that. And that became a part of my training. Listen, first, before you do any analysis, what do you see? Just don't worry about it. Just like, this is what I see. Then you add the context and then you add the analysis. And that's how I worked with my guys. I was like, I need to know all of their body language, all of their nonverbals. When you do in sales teams, they call it a CRM. We just had, it was like our contact, like when you contract report, when you meet someone, then you document everything. I was like, we're adding body language into this, because we're adding nonverbals. We're adding how they're dressed. What is it like? All of that stuff, it gets added in. And my guys were like, oh my gosh, we have to write. That's like 14 pages. Yeah, I know, but we're doing it because that's how you know, later on we can track why we don't feel right about something or anything like that. And so that was kind of a fun experience, but you know, it's one of those stressful ones where we're like, oh, he's a bad guy. You know.
Now, okay, so did you take his advice then, or and go pick up the other guys, or
Oh
what
yeah. Yeah, we still
did
got him. Yeah, like he was, you know, his because you know because because he's a shady guy doesn't mean he doesn't have actionable information. So
Right. So you picked those guys up. Did you pay him?
I think that guy got paid a little bit before we realized that he was, you know, before he re that he was dealing. But you know, but we had like alerts up. You know, there was more red flags. You're like, watch him, like keep an eye on, like figure out what he's doing with the money that we give him. Like we were a little bit more wary about this guy after that. You know, after that initial, you are getting money from somewhere kind of thing.
Now, how much you pay someone for good information like that? Like, what's the rate these days?
It varies, and that's not really something that that like I can really bring up.
Okay, got it, got it.
It varies on depending. It really depends. Sometimes there was a at the time there was like a reward system set up. So, you know, if people were like, "Hey, there's a weapons cache over here," and then the weapons cache, you know, then they get a couple hundred bucks or what. It, like it, it's it but. The way that it works is it's difficult to explain, because it varies for every person depending on our relationship with them.
Well, because so it's my understanding that you guys go over there and you got to piece together who is doing what, like in the whole network of command, I guess, over there. And so that's part of it, right? It's just straight up figuring out who's doing what and paying people to do it. I talked to Robin Dreek, who would you know Robin? Yeah, he would he and he's got an episode on the show. He would recruit spies here in the US, and he said people were knocking on the door on the 4th of July trying to sell information. So it's widely known that this is a thing that happens, right?
Like the
So
US has money, you know,
yeah.
we should get some of it. And
A dollar goes far everywhere.
but that's where there's a lot of vetting though that goes into that. So you get people, you get like you know, thousands of people just saying, hey, I've got information. And sometimes it's just that, like, that hey, they're selling, you know, Osama bin Laden is over there, you should go, you know, and you know, he's like, can I get money now? I told you he's hanging out in, you know, off the coast of India. You should give me some money now. Like no, we gotta. This is a longer process than that, and we need a better relationship than just you telling us something that is speculation.
Oh wow. Okay. So other stories you got? Like you got to have some crazy ones cuz how long were you in for?
I was in 22 years total.
22. Yeah.
Yeah. So there was it, one of my the funniest training exercises that we did was we were teaching people how to do surveillance, and this one guy was like, so when we talked about surveillance, we're like, you have to blend in, you have to look like you belong, like you don't want to be noticed, like you're just like anybody else that's on the street minding your own business doing everything you have a right to do. But you know, don't be, you know, don't get noticed, basically. Look normal. So there was one exercise where we were just outside of the military base because we did all our training on, and then all right, now let's move off and go into the real world. And this so where they were going to start their surveillance, there was construction on the road, and they'd seen it for the past few days. So one of the guys, he got like this vest, this orange vest, and he stood out on the side of the road with all the construction workers. He was just standing there.
He just got a vest. He's like, order it on
He's
Amazon.
got a
Okay.
vest. And I was like, that's beautiful. I love that. Like, and so except that he, as the person they were trying to follow, drove by. No, actually, it was before this. It worked so well that the supervisor came over and he just saw that he was just standing around not doing anything. He was like, "Hey, I need you to start working." The guy's like, "Well, I don't think you understand. I'm with the military and we're doing an exercise right now. So I'm just gonna wait here for a few minutes if that's all right." He's like, "Quit screwing around and grab that sign." And because he didn't really have the military physique that you would normally expect. He was a little bit heavier, and so he looked like he belonged, just standing on the side of the road not doing anything with an orange vest. He looked like one of those guys.
Did he get the sign?
He
What
did. He like he grabbed he was like, "All right, I'll just grab the sign." He grabbed the stop and the stop and slow sign. And he was just like letting, he was just doing the twisty thing where just letting people through, and so it was perfect, except that he got so excited when he saw the guy that there was two things that I would have made it even better. One, when the guy was coming, he like turns the stop so he gets the guy to stop, and all the other surveillance guys can get behind him. They got a little bit of time, but he just let him go by. And when he went by, he was so excited about following that he like just tossed the sign aside, ran to his car, and then got behind him. And so the guy that we had as we call him the rabbit. So the guy we had as the rabbit just. He was looking in his rearview mirror because he was like, it was his job. He knew he was being followed. It was his job just to say, these are the things that make you stand out. So do a training for everyone. But when he was looking in the rearview mirror, he saw this whole thing happen where the guy just tosses it to the side and he jumps in the car and he follows. Like you were so perfect about being discreet up until that moment. But then, of course, he forgot to take the vest off for the rest, for half the day. So he's walking around town with an orange vest on, and he just got picked out every time. So when you do training, then like those events are like they happen all the time where people just do some ridiculous stuff. But you see some magic too. Like one guy, there was a our the rabbit went in to
Now,
a.
define the rabbit. Is he's the
Oh,
front runner, I guess.
yeah. Rabbit is like it's the per it, when you're doing surveillance training, that's the person that you're following.
Oh, okay. Got
Like kind of like Alice in Wonderland. He's the rabbit. We're just following him wherever he goes.
it.
So this rabbit went into like this big building, and someone went to follow him in, but it was huge, and there was like a convention in the same building, but the rabbit wasn't going there, but this guy had known, and he sees the convention, he like walks over to it, he's looking for the person he's following, and the people at the I guess the entry desk, the registration desk, they're like, "Oh, hey, are you here?" And he was like, "Yeah." And he just like grabbed one of the name tags that were sitting there. "This is me." And he puts it on. He goes to grab a coffee, gets a donut, and but he gave him a really good reason to stand around and just kind of observe and look around and see what was see if he could find anybody that he was looking for. And so sometimes like there was both good and bad. It was like that's perfect example of what you should do, and then not so perfect example. But really good experiences in the training environment.
Wow. Now, what's your number one tip for I guess you'd call it social engineering, which we it was kind of what you just talked about. Like for talking your way into somewhere, is what's your tip for that?
So I think I one of the things that I like when I train people is I tell them, let's practice not asking questions. So we'll spend like a full day, like go to, the challenge is go 24 hours without asking a single question. And people are like, "What? But I like, how do I get information?" It's like, that's the trick. Like you elicit the information. You bring up stuff. Like you say, wow, you know, that's a really cool, you know, shirt. I wonder where I could get something like that. So you're not asking the question, but you're still making a statement that is prompting someone to tell you, well, you get it at this location. So I think as far as like getting into places like that, I've noticed that sometimes when you just ask question after question after question, people get a little bit more defensive because, you know, they're like, why are you asking so many questions when instead you're just having a conversation and you're complimenting people or you're challenging what they're saying or other types of elicitation techniques, but without asking a question. So people feel more like I'm going to give you this information. I'm going to help you with this information because that's just what people do. They, you know, they want to help out. They want to be helpful.
Well, another really good one is when, like, if you want to find out how much someone makes, and it's easy, like at the grocery store, be like, hey, I heard y'all just got a $5 an hour raise.
then, they're like, oh, I wish we only make like 12 bucks.
Yeah. So other tips like that, like that people can use for themselves to get that information, because really, at least in my training, it's all about information recovery. That's everything that your whole focus is finding out what's on someone's mind, what has happened, so you can make a better decision moving forward in any kind of situation. Because I know you work with a lot of salespeople. I do as well. So yeah. Other tips.
As far as like just getting them to open up and talk, I think using the right words, you know, using visual words when they're visual people, using auditory words when they're auditory people.
I love that system. Yes.
Yeah. So I think when I first heard about that, I was like, well, I guess that's interesting. I guess that works. But then I really like when I started observing a little bit more, I noticed that if you, like my wife, she asked me all the time, like, what do you think about this? How do you feel about this? And I'm like, eh, it's pretty good. Because I'm not that kinesthetic person. I can't explain how I feel. But that's how she is. So that's why she's asking me.
My husband's the same way. He's a rocket scientist, and if it's not statistics, he doesn't get it.
So, but if you say like, you know, give me your vision for what this looks like, I'll be like, oh, and then I'll tell you all day. I could probably answer the questions that my wife is asking if it was more in a visual context. So once I realized like oh yeah, because I can't explain how I feel about things, but I can talk about what I want to, like how I see things, then it became a little bit more like real. I was like, oh yeah, people do talk a little bit more about that. You know, people are better at expressing themselves and they want to share more when it's in a language that they understand.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I have when I train people, I have a little quiz people can take so they can figure out their primary representational system and the whole thing. So yeah, straight out of NLP training. It's a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay. Highest stakes situation you've ever been in. Can you tell us?
Oh my gosh. So, in 2003, I went into Iraq, like with the initial push.
Oh.
And so there was a time. Now at the time, like before we went in, we're like, hey, if anyone is ever trying to block your path, like then our SOP is we're just gonna drive right through it.
Yeah.
Like because this is a wartime, and you know what you don't want is to get, you know, stuck in a funnel where, you know, you can't go forward, can't go backward.
Traffic jam. Yeah.
Yeah. And so when we moved I was in detention facilities for a lot of the time, but then when we were going to move into another location in Karbala, it was just us, like our vehicle. And then once we got to, cause we were like in the middle of the desert. So, and this is like the old West. So, you know, like we just went off by ourselves sometimes. And we got to an area of Karbala where we met up with someone that was going to take us to the base, to the like the temporary base that we had established. And so it was that lead vehicle and our vehicle. And in that vehicle, there was the driver, and you know, they call him the TC, or you know, it was like basically he's just kind of the commanding navigator kind of thing. And then in our vehicle was our driver and our TC and me and an interpreter. And so as we're driving through Karbala, all of a sudden we start seeing like there's like this big procession of people. There's thousands of people in the street, and they're all like hanging off of trucks and vans and buses, pounding their chests. They're like nobody, like up to this point, because a lot of people didn't like Saddam, people were waving at us. They were like happy to see us. They're like, oh, you guys are awesome. They were happy. You know, they're running alongside our trucks, and they're, you know, smiling and laughing. In Karbala, they weren't doing that. They were stone-faced, and they're, you know, beating their chests, and they're all shouting and yelling and screaming. And there's people all over the street. And all of a sudden we turn a corner, and there's like the road is just blocked completely. And the people in front of us stopped. They didn't do the drive right through like we were supposed to. So, you know, the TC in my vehicle and the you know, it was on the radio with the other guy. What's going on? What do we got to get out of here? They're like, we're trying to find a way out. It was like really crazy. And there's just on the sides behind us now, there's thousands of people.
And is that why they stopped?
They stopped because there was people in the street. There were just people and vehicles just were in the way that we were supposed to be going. And so then the TC in my vehicle, he goes, Clark, get out and pull security. I'm like, oh my gosh, just me? So like I took the M4, and I didn't have a round in the chamber at the time. And so I was like, I'm gonna wait. And I got out of the vehicle. I was like, 30 of you are not gonna make it. And you know, because that's how many is like in a magazine. That's how many rounds are in a magazine. So I got out, and I cocked so that people could see me cocking. And then I was like, all right, I'm gonna die, but let's do this. At first I was really scared. Like once you get out there, then you're just like, okay, because all I did was like look at people's faces. I was like, who is, and like Joe Navarro calls it oxygenating, you know, like they're like the nostrils are flaring, or like who's getting ready to make a move. And
Free violence.
so I'm just going around like not you, not you, not you, not you, not you, not you. And all of a sudden then they were like, hey Clark, get back in, because they all of a sudden they like drove around. So like nothing happened, but we found out later that it was a religious procession that like Saddam didn't let them have, because he was a different sect. So he didn't let them have a certain religious procession, and now they finally could have it because Saddam wasn't stopping them.
So they were
And
angry though, going through, or
no
were they
no no it
surprised?
was like you know how like sometimes there's like the self-flagellation. You know, they weren't angry. They were just intense. They were they're you know they were being like you know, they were being solemn because of the religious overtones. And yeah, so I mean, it's a good thing we didn't drive him over. It was a good thing I didn't shoot anybody. But like I had no idea why all of a sudden there were thousands of people in the street that didn't look as happy to see us as the rest of them. I don't know.
And you got out. Okay, and it
We got
worked.
it. Yeah, we got out. I mean, apparently they. I mean, I don't know what happened because I wasn't. I don't know how we got out. Like I was kind of focusing on the people. But
But
that was
the interpreter didn't say anything? Did you say you had an interpreter with you?
yeah. But he was in the car,
He couldn't figure it out either?
and I was asking, and you know, I think he was trying to figure it out. I know people had signs, but I don't know if he you know saw them. He wasn't saying anything.
Oh,
Or
time for a
maybe
new
he did.
interpreter.
Yeah, maybe he did see something, and or maybe he did say something, and I was, I was in that tunnel vision zone that I wasn't in. I don't know.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, scariest moment of my life.
Yeah, I bet. Well, I'm glad you made it. And I mean, it's crazy to be over there. I mean, that you, the service people have my respect. That is for sure. So, okay. So, how are you helping people now? Let's talk about that.
So right now, you know what I've noticed, and perhaps you've noticed something similar, is that I think our direct human to human skills have kind of become really dull, based on a greater focus on the phone in front of us than the people in front of us.
That's true.
And then you tack on a few years of social distancing. And I think so you get people that their social developmental years have been at a time where they're not looking at people anymore. You know, like their communication is 100% target eggplant emoji. Like that's so I think I want to be able to do something that helps to get those direct interaction skills back on the whetstone. And I noticed that the people that are most interested in that are like sales teams.
Yeah, I work with a lot of them too.
They're like, and they're hungry for it. They want like the, hey, give me the step by step. Give me like, help me out here, because this is how I make money. This is how I live. And so they're a little bit more willing to, to pony up for training on this. And so what I was like, well, how do I differentiate myself? There's like, there's body language experts. There's negotiation experts. Like what do I got? And I'm like, so now I have a spy school for sales teams.
Oh, I
Like
love that.
so make it like super sexy. I'm like, I'm gonna teach you how spies get information. 'Cause like who better, who can better get that type of information than a spy? Like information, like reading nonverbals, building relationships of trust with someone that they just met, and then getting them to open up and talk about their secrets. Like, 'cause if you're a sales guy and you're a sales pro, and people have these objections that they're not saying because they don't want to offend you by saying they're not interested in your product, or they just don't want to be rude and confrontational, or maybe they know that you're going to try and overcome their objections if they bring them up. Then I, like spies get that information. And we talked earlier about like the elicitation, like how do you get people talking? How do you get people to trust you? And so when I say like I'm going to teach your sales team how to become a spy, then people are like, how does that work?
Oh, I love spy stuff. Yeah, absolutely. That's pretty cool. So are you doing keynotes or more like in-house trainings, like longer
In-house
with
training.
okay.
Yeah, more in-house training. I'm looking to focus on the team aspect. I know a lot of like I kind of want to, like as I charge people, it's for their team. I'm like, let me talk to your team, and we'll do sessions with your team, and we talk. You pick the modules that you'd like to learn about that are going to be the best for you, and then we'll work on, we'll work on what works for your team.
Oh, I love that. That's good. Okay, so how can people get a hold of you?
So I'm like a LinkedIn guy. So I like LinkedIn. I have I'm at Derek Clark. So DerikClark. It's all like no spaces or anything. That's I'm at on LinkedIn. But then I have a website. It's bodysites.com. So sites, SIGHTS.
Oh, cool. Oh, I love it. All right. Well, I got to tell you, I've learned a little bit here today, and thanks for your service, for everything you're doing out there. And I look forward to keeping in touch.
Yes, I would love that. I love your podcast. And like I'm excited to be here today, and I really appreciate you letting me come on your show.
Oh, love it. You're awesome.